Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 397. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me, and we welcome back to the show after a lengthy hiatus. Hot tea himself, Oscar Willis from the Mac Life. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. Formally nominated from the Mac Life.
Oh, it stings just a little bit. Huh?
Yeah. Just the intro felt empty without it, as does my career.
The World MMA Awards gave you this.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame.
That just means you get to have more cocktails this time.
Yes. Yeah.
They enjoyed the fact I had so many last time, I think.
That's why you're not nominated. Sir, by the way, since you're not nominated, you do not get the open bar. So if you want to attend, you're going to have to pay for those drinks.
Yes, I think that was a... Yeah, anyway.
Hilarious. All right, well, listen, we got a lot to talk about. But first, I do have to mention, I know you don't want to spend a whole show talking about you, but we got to bring it up right off the top. Look, man, we're like 2.5 weeks away from your amateur MMA debut, right?
Yeah, 17 days, I think it is.
Not that anybody's counting.
Yeah. I fucking counted the minutes, too. Yeah, it's getting close. I can't wait for it to be over. Not necessarily because I'm, like, scared necessarily, but it's just been, like, since May, the middle of May to now, it's, like, a long time.
Right.
And while I appreciate you need to be committed to these things, it can be, like, frustrating, like, oh, you know, you guys have been doing this podcast, and you guys have had a few beers, and it's like, I can't do that because I don't want to be around, and then I'll get fucked up and stuff. So, you know, ready to have a bit of freedom back in my life, but it's been an eye-opening and cool experience, I'll say.
I bet, man. Obviously, the Train Alta program, you guys have been doing that at least 6 months now, man. Yeah. I guess kind of a little quirk in the scheduling because that wasn't the original intention, but you guys have been having it for a while, and I don't know, it has been, you know, so behind the scenes, we've been having these inside jokes all along the way, right? Of like, well, us fighters, and you know how we feel in these moments and things like that, jokingly. Yeah. But I will say, watching from afar, it really does seem like you're experiencing all those things that the fighters do in terms of your body breaking down in lengthy training, in terms of just the mental grind that it is on you.
Rescheduling randomly. Yeah, I'm always very cautious of treating it too seriously because I think there's some people could sort of have an amateur fight and act like they've just won a world title, and I want to be very cautious of sounding like that. Or even, you know, I've mentioned to a couple of UFC guys, like, hey, I'm having an amateur fight. They couldn't be less impressed.
What's the rest of the story?
I said to Volkanovski, he's like, how's things with you? I was like, yeah, I've got my first fight in a couple of weeks. He's like, cool, I just got here on Monday. Like, he's completely
no soul.
Yeah, just completely. So I with that in mind, I don't want to treat an amateur fight like it's a big deal. But this particular experience, like, I have been injured a few times. They did reschedule it, and that did mentally, like, kind of piss me off and make me, you know, like, 5 extra weeks was not particularly exciting, and I have got a full sort of ringer of it, you know?
Yeah.
But then plus that, I've had the difference of training alongside the guy I'm going to fight, which
that's
has been
too,
a weird little quirk as well. And yeah, it's been a cool experience. I think if I did it again, I'd do different stuff. Like, I probably wouldn't start off as aggressively. I'd probably take my time, but if I win, it'll have been worth it.
I'm looking forward to it.
So it won't be worth it if you don't win?
I will swear to my dying day that it was, but inside, no. It's such a waste of my time.
Well, so anybody that wants to know, November 19th at the Circa in Las Vegas, it'll be held as part of a Tough Enough charity event. And
that's why I'm doing it, John. You know,
for the kids,
man.
So if anybody's in town and wants to go, definitely come check it out. The Circa. I'm excited because we held an event there before, but it was still under construction. Obviously, the Circa is real new, so I'm kind of excited to see the ballroom. But proud to announce too that it is official. I will be on the call. I will not be on the card. I will be on the call. I'm not making that announcement today. But I'm excited about that and a little bit. A little bit nervous as well.
Well, it's great because your voice carries so much. So if you say something like, Oscar could throw the left hook, I could be like, oh, cool. Like, it'll be like
an extra corner, man. I had the experience before a little bit as well because Richard Hunter did the same thing. Yeah. You know, he went through the program when it was still known as Winter Warrior. And he had the fight. And it's tough, man. It's a weird thing about this sport, man, because, you know, you watch people week in and week out just get the hell beat out of them or whatever. Like, when it's somebody that you have a real connection to, like, the nerve level just goes completely through the roof, you know?
One of my biggest concerns about the fight is getting nervous, being really scared, having an adrenaline dump like that. But then they say, like, oh, you get more nervous about people you care about fighting, right? And, you know, as we know, if you form, like, bonds with people. Yeah. Even watching Anderson. Like, I was, you know, nearly having a heart attack the whole time just because I love the guy. And so I feel like I say to you all the time, I get nervous asking questions at press conferences. So as I dig deep into it, I'm like, well, I experience nerves more often than this fuck experienced nerves, so I should be able to manage it better. He's 20. What's he got to be nervous about? So
yeah, facing a young buck, right?
Yes, he is. He is a young buck. He is.
There's those nerves you were talking about.
Someone was like, what if Connor was going to watch? I was like, if Connor was going to watch, I'd offer him a grand to take a dive so I could definitely win. But
We're trying to find out if it's going to be televised, so we'll let everybody know. Because what Tough Enough normally does, since they've gotten on UFC Fight Pass, it used to be all amateur and we would do streaming deals and stuff like that, but now it's pro-am and the pro fights are on UFC Fight Pass, but UFC Fight Pass doesn't broadcast amateur fights. So the amateur television deal was always on BN Sports. But this one being a charity event, it's a little bit different than normal. So if we find out it's on television, we'll be sure and share it.
Yeah, and if not, I'll have like someone filming it almost certainly.
And like a live stream or something like that?
I think I'm going to get Jose to come and film like the night of for me.
Oh, yeah? Maybe like a little documentary or something?
Yeah, again, not treating it too seriously, but like at least the fight day and stuff.
It's a cool memory, right?
Yeah, and
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean.
There'll be no memory at all.
Or the film's going to get buried seen.
I can promise you if I lose, no one will see hide a hair of it. But if I win, then there will be footage, yeah. I'll put the fight on the Mac Life if they let me, I guess.
He's going to win. You're going to win. We're putting that out there.
We're pulling it for you.
Appreciate it.
Well, you touched on it, man. Anderson Silva versus Jake Paul. I did want to kind of wrap that up. Obviously, you were out there for all the chaos and the madness. We know that those boxing events are always a little bit crazy. And, of course, you bring Jake Paul in the mix, and it gets even a little bit crazier. So it seemed like your typical chaotic week. And in the aftermath since, we're hearing that the numbers weren't as good as they had hoped they do. And I'm a little bit surprised. I want to get your guys' take on this because, not that I feel like Jake Paul is some massive, should do a million buys or whatever. But yeah. I was actually really intrigued by this one, and not because I'm in that camp of cheering against Jake Paul. I know he mentioned that at one point, like, oh, the MMA people want me to lose. It's not that. Like, I was just interested because I wanted to see where Anderson Silva was at 47. And to be honest, I picked him going in. I thought Anderson Silva was going to be able to edge out a decision. I didn't think he'd be able to KO Jake Paul, but I thought he'd be able to outbox him over the course of 8 rounds.
I forget. Who did Kenny say was going to win? Who did Kenny say was going to win?
I think Kenny said Jake Paul, and that's why you're the picks leader over at MMA Junkie with a commanding lead over there.
Commanding lead. Some before, because I wonder, and maybe you're going to bring it up. I saw that one video. You seem like you and Jake Paul are besties doing your little walk-off interviews. Did you make a bet that you're going to get a tattoo now because of Jake Paul's win?
I was like sitting here thinking, I was like, I bet neither of these guys saw that
saw
video.
That.
So I was like,
I saw that video. I just wanted to bring it up before we forgot about it and talk about real shit.
I don't know if you saw it, Joe. I said to Jake Paul, like, how are you going to beat Anderson? He said, I'm going to knock him out. I said, I bet you if you don't knock him out, you have to get a tattoo of an Oscar statue.
Okay.
And I lost the bet to Jake Paul tattooed on me. And then some would say he pussied out immediately and said, oh, how about if I just win?
Just do a win.
And then I was like, yeah, fuck it, I'll do that.
Oh, and you folded there?
Yeah, I just did it. Yeah, I did. And then, I'm supposedly.
Are you going to actually follow through with
it? I think I'm going to get it in Chinese writing so no one can tell what it says.
That's smart play. You never said it.
Or add it
in
into something else, like, say you want to get a character and he's sitting on the toilet reading a paper on the paper throat. I lost to Jake Paul or something. Put it into something else, find some way to do it or
that's
something.
Not a bad idea.
You don't have
that's
to be the guy idea. On the toilet. I was just figuring.
Alternatively, I was like, he has to be there so I can at least film it and get some sort of content out of it. But
that would be something.
That would be a good idea for you. Yeah. Get some views.
But just like at the time, I was like, this will be funny. And then I sort of thought, I can't imagine some of my employers loving the idea of me getting Jake or my father for that matter.
Plus, remember Jake didn't, after he had Tyron, the whole bit about doing the tattoo, and then afterwards he's like, I can't believe you got another man's name tattooed on you. I was like, would he do some shit like that?
I will say, when he won the fight and it was a post-fight press conference, I hit record and fucking ran to the back of the room just in case he saw me. I was literally like,
that's awesome.
I was like, just because he strikes me as the kind of guy who would sort of remember memeable moments, I guess. So I was just, I didn't want him to see me and be like,
he's going to remember it.
Yeah, for sure. Did you watch the post-fight presser?
I did not watch the post-fight presser. Because I'd already gotten through the whole. For me, for my day was the whole UFC fight night post fight, and then came home. And I'll be honest with you, I was a little bit deflated when the fight was over, man. This was a weird. This is honestly the first Jake Paul fight that I've really felt a connection to. Like with Askren, it was like, okay, we all see what you're doing here. Okay, I didn't expect to see Askren get knocked out like instantly, but I didn't feel really good about his chances.
Yeah,
with Woodley, I would say with Woodley, I was a little more connected because now you're talking about former champ, but we all knew that Woodley had kind of slowed down on throwing volume and that sort of things. And I was like, well, how's that going to work in a boxing match? But this one, I was like, Anderson, dude. Yeah. I mean, one of the greatest of all time. I mean, you know, we were talking about today, like I know there's probably MMA fans that joined the sport well after Anderson had his prime, but that prime Anderson was like otherworldly stuff, man.
Yeah.
And so I was pulling. I wanted to see him do good.
I mean,
here,
there were glimpses.
I felt
there were glimpses.
Round two
especially,
was nice.
I mean, it was just like his head movement. Like some of the stuff, I was like, man, look at Jake. He's throwing these big haymakers, and he was missing.
Missing
just ever so slight. And I was like, fuck yeah, good job, Anderson. I was like, great head movement, great head movement. The only part I really started getting worried in the fight. I mean, I could definitely see. I was like, okay, Anderson's not throwing. He's not hitting him. He's just evading him. I was like, maybe he's trying to let Jake burn himself out a little bit, throwing these big punches. But he just, like, there was this point where he just, it didn't feel like he was throwing. And I was like, it just felt like Anderson, when he started showboating, when he did that part when he was dropping down, and like he was starting to do the, like, Ollie moves and stuff, and I was like, oh no, I just started having like Chris Weidman flashbacks in my head. I was like, this kid's power, you don't do that.
Yeah.
I was like, you don't do that, because all it takes is that one of you just thinking like, oh, look at me, I'm flowing, I'm in a flow, and then he's done.
The way I predicted the fight was, I thought that someone just pointed out to me, like, because at first I thought Jake was going to win because of the age and stuff. And then someone just pointed out, when have you seen Jake fight someone who can throw a combination?
Right.
And when you say it that plainly, it's like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you know. And then he had that video of him like 3 years ago just starting, and he was obviously terrible. And you think, well, he can't have improved that much in 3 years. And actually he has. Yeah. But I thought the same as you. I thought Anderson was going to get comfy and then do a Weidman and get caught. I just think, and as much as Jake's team like hate to address this, I think Anderson's just too old. You know, you saw the flashes of brilliance. Like his head, I would say his head movement was still fast, his hands were not. And I think there's something to be said that MMA guys just don't seem to have the power in boxing gloves. You know, there were times I thought for the first half of the fight at least that Anderson was putting it on him, and I thought Jake looked flustered. I thought Jake was like, oh my god, someone's actually putting me in a fight.
As I'm watching round two, I'm like, oh, I turned to my wife and I was like, Jake messed up.
And then I think there was an element, I don't know if you could say this is tactics, if it was just sort of how he, you know, instinctually went to it, but you could tell by the end of it that Anderson wanted to get him against the corner and throw these very tight inside uppercuts. Right.
Those uppercuts were nasty, especially stepping away from him.
And when he did that, Jake would clinch. And you could see Anderson getting visibly frustrated with the clinch. I think that negated Anderson's game plan.
That was the big part right there. Like, I think that confuses or upsets a lot of these MMA guys, where, you know, there's something when you have to constantly throw these hands. You're constantly throwing your hands. You're not getting that chance to clinch. But like when he, like you said, when he would work him over the corner, and then he started to get a point where he's like, okay, he was in the perfect range for him.
Yeah.
If he start throwing these combinations, he was immediately getting tied up. And it was just like, that's the part that drives me crazy about boxing sometimes, that we don't get in MMA. You have to fight yourself out of that position, you know. But in boxing, when you finally get this guy cornered over and he's getting him into the range to start throwing combos, he would just tie him up.
Right.
And then it would just go another minute with no punches getting thrown by Anderson. And you're just like, come on, you got to throw. Like, he was just picking away. You know, Jake would just get him and then just throw a jab. Throw another jab. Yeah. And then it was just in my head, I'm like, oh, there's a point. There's a point.
Yeah.
There's a point. And I'm like, where's the answer, Anderson? Where's the answer back? You know, and then at the end of the rounds, when you start to see like he was getting frustrated, then as the fight went on, I felt like in their head, they were sort of tallying up this score like, okay, we still got this many rounds left. You could do damage. You could do whatever. I was like, but bro, you're giving away rounds leading up to that point.
First
time
I think I've seen Anderson bleed, by the way. Like his nose was busted. I think that's the first time I've ever seen him bleed. So that, and you're so invested in it, it's impossible to score, really. I didn't even start thinking about scoring until like round six. But when he was bleeding, I was almost like, when the fuck did that happen? I was so focused on Anderson, what he was doing. It's those fights where you're invested are really tough to score. because you're just sort of you're not watching the fight, you're watching the action.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So you're
invested. I mean, is it just because only hardcore MMA fans were the ones that were invested that this thing didn't do good?
I think for me, like, I can only go on our numbers, but leading in through fight week, our content was down massively, and I was very, very surprised.
Wow. Interesting.
I don't know how much of that Jake Paul said today that it was the Anderson knockout story. I don't know how much of that is true, because traditionally, from what I've seen in the UFC, any chaos is good chaos.
Right.
When there's chaos, people tune in.
Right.
You know, like the Hamzat, Nate, Kevin Holland thing. All chaos is great, yeah. So that, I don't know if I necessarily buy that's the reason, but I do believe that we're one of those ones where we're too close. We didn't realize that Anderson, you know.
Yeah.
If Jake Paul, in the crowd, like, there were many, many, many children. And by, like, children, I mean 10 years old and stuff. Like,
wow.
The youngest crowd I've seen at a fight ever, even more than his Woodley fights. Like, very young children. So, walking around, like, in massive necklaces and stuff, it was trippy as fuck. But,
who would have no idea who Anderson
wouldn't have
and the
an
greatness
idea.
Of
yeah,
Anderson.
Wouldn't have,
no, they may be aware of it, but they don't have any connection to it.
Or even more, like, they probably don't even know who Ronda is at this point.
Right.
You know? So that's two generations ago that Anderson is. So I think there's that. I think that the numbers sort of curious me. Like, Jake Paul said he thinks it's 200 to 300. That confuses me, because that basically is suggesting that 200,000 to 300,000 people chose to buy it, but chose not to watch the free to watch content beforehand, and that usually you'd have more people watch
Absolutely.
Free than pay.
Yeah.
And I would also say that pay-per-view wise, his audience would strike me as likely streamers rather than purchasers. So I don't know what the numbers did. I just know that from my side, it didn't look like it trended that well. And I didn't see much post-fight reaction on Twitter or much at all.
No, you know? Not really. So next Jake Paul fight?
Because they didn't want to admit they streamed it illegally. Nobody wanted to say they watched it. Everybody was like, I can't believe you bought it. And then you had everybody's like, well, I didn't pay for it. Ooh, I mean,
So the next time Jake Paul fights, is it an automatic yes for you to cover it? Or is it now you got to see who's...
I'll probably have to see what's happening. Certainly see the opponent, certainly.
You got to get that tattoo sorted first, or he's not going to be able to get credential.
I mean, like, if he boxes Tommy Fury in the UK, I probably won't fly to the UK for that, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing for Tommy Fury?
I don't give a fuck about Tommy Fury.
Yeah.
No one does. Not even the UK. No, I'm joking. But, certainly.
Interesting.
Nate Diaz, though? That's
Nate
a yes.
Diaz, yes.
That's
Nate
Diaz.
Because it's Nate Diaz.
And Nate's I guarantee, like, their fight week won't be dancing together, you know?
Right.
Like, Nate, dude. Nate slapped his meditation coach. Like,
was that the guy that was in the video? I was wondering who that guy was.
That's,
I
mean, that's
his
Jake's meditation
coach.
But it seemed like
the most chill dude on his team. And Nate slapped. Like, so they got into a big argument.
Oh, that's great.
They got into a big argument with Jake's security. A lot of N-words thrown around, by the way, from everybody. But
Nate?
From the security.
No, and they were saying Nate?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but they were that. And then the meditation guy walked up to Nate and was like, calm down, namaste. He was like, calm down. Nate just slapped and went, fuck you, bitch.
that's
the funniest shit.
Well, that's what confused me, because when I looked at the video, I was like, who's this one guy that chose to go? And it's extra funny that it's the meditation guy. Like, he thought he was trying to do some healing. Yeah. He's like, I want to put some Reiki on.
Because I walked past the ring the night before, and he was in there with Jake, and they were both, like, you know, eyes closed and the... But like legs crossed sort of thing. So I was like, I recognize the guy. And then he fucking got Nate.
That just makes me think, what did Connor say to, or no, who was it that said that?
Playing touch button.
Also Nate.
Also Nate.
He just doesn't have time for him.
That was a movement coach.
No, but yeah, so I enjoy. So when you do stuff like that, I will say this, one thing that doesn't, like, this is all hypothetical, one thing that will interest me, you know, when Dana pulled the presser with Hamzat, Kevin and Nate, like he cancelled that. I don't know if Showtime would know enough about Nate and his team to think to do that. But from what I've seen of Jake Paul's team, they're gobby and loud.
Right.
And from what I've seen, we know of Nate's team. They're all about it.
Yep.
I don't know if Showtime would have the knowledge to be like, we should cancel a press conference if it was looking that bad.
Boy, that's you know what? That is
love
a fair
to see
point,
somebody
though.
Because
with
when
Jake's
I saw
that,
when I saw the video, when I saw the video of Nate's team backstage throwing stuff like that, I was like, dude, they would happily do that on a stage.
Dude, that's honestly a really fair point, because we know from experience in covering boxing events, they're way more chaotic and less organized than the UFC are, as far as, like, everything being regimented and security
in
place.
In fact, like, fighters actually getting hands on other fighters, like, it happens all the time in boxing.
When Jake Paul first fought Woodley, and someone insulted Woodley's mother.
Oh, yeah.
There was, like, a big kerfuffle.
Yeah.
And it was basically like a fluke that Tyron didn't come with lots of people.
Yeah.
Or he came with people that were ready to get loud but not necessarily physical. All of Nate's guys will get physical in a second.
Oh, yeah. So and he never goes anywhere without 30 of them.
Yeah, there were a lot, there are a lot of guys there.
Do you? I mean, you watch your share of boxing. So, I mean, with Jake Paul, I mean, do you – like, because I do not feel that he is in any – you know, when he says, you know, he wants to fight Canelo, I'm like, I'm assuming that's a joke.
I think that got the reaction it deserved.
Right, yeah, exactly.
He was like, Nate Canelo. So, Nate. Then.
So, Nate, yeah, yeah, yeah. Nate. I mean, but do you – as you said, he has – he's clearly improved. He is investing time. He is investing effort. Yeah. I mean – And this is the other thing that I try to remind people as well, I guess, is like nobody at his point in his career is facing anybody. You know what I mean? A boxer, you might be 15-0, 20-0 before you actually fight somebody. Yeah. But do you think Jake Paul can actually be somebody?
In boxing, I think there's a way if the organizations decide it, you can get a belt.
Right.
It would not – like the WBC have announced they will be ranking Jake Paul soon or after this fight. There's ways. You can structure your way to a boxing belt, and I think if Jake wanted to do that, he could probably orchestrate that. The only thing is, like, who are the cruiserweight champions in boxing right now? I haven't got a fucking clue.
Exactly.
So what's in it for him? Because this is the issue with Jake Paul, and maybe one he's really having to face. Who's his audience? Is it the MMA audience that he's constantly provoking, or is it the boxing audience? Well, he only ever fights MMA guys. He only ever talks about Dana and the MMA guys. So it's if he goes and fights, you know, Kovalev or someone like that in boxing, who
boxing media has to look at him as an imposter.
I think the boxing media still do that. You know, you don't get any of like the broadsheets, right, you know, at his fights and stuff. I think he's sort of in this weird gray area where he's sort of half circus act, half trying to legitimize himself. I think the guy clearly has skills. He reminds me a little bit of like the CM Punk experiment. What can a guy with unlimited time and money achieve in such a very short period? Now, obviously, Punk was older, didn't have the athletic background maybe that Jake did. Jake clearly has, you know, improved a lot. I just don't know what's his end goal here. To me, the whole experiment's clearly been like, let's get a fight with Conor McGregor at some point. I don't know if that'll happen necessarily, but now he's talking about becoming a real boxer. I don't know if Jake knows what's his end goal.
You think they'll follow through on this fighter union thing?
I mean, to like,
just don't know how you pull it off.
But it's sort of like, to what end? You know, just because Jake, and I'm not, by the way, I'm not like suggesting it's a bad idea and they shouldn't do it. Like, I'm all for it. Let's say we get a press conference tomorrow with Jake Anderson and GSP announcing the formation of a United Fighters Association. So that creates headlines. Dana gets asked about it. Dana gets annoyed. But then, like, so what? Jake calls up Dana and is like, well, we've got this association. Now you got to pay them more. Dana would just say, fuck off.
I've seen so many iterations of it. Like, I like it. I mean,
they come up, but just then they just falter because they have no power and nobody recognizes them.
That's what I wonder is how committed is he to this cause? Is he just using it as a touch button?
I think it's not just
a promotional tactic?
Well, even if it is a promotional tactic or a touch button, going through with it is even better in that case, right?
You keep saying touch button or touch button?
Touch button in the bar.
You sound like you guys say touch button.
So like his ass play. I think he'd like to do it. I just don't. We've spoken about this many, many times. The UFC are all powerful. Since the pandemic, even more so. Since the ESPN deal, even more so. Combine it all together. Like, if Jorge Masvidal can be sat on the sidelines for a year, Conor got pushed out for a year, John Jones got pushed out for a year. Like, they don't need to listen to you, especially if you're not in the company. Yeah. That's what I think.
Fair point. Well, we'll see what Jake Paul does next. It seems like all signs are pointing towards potentially Nate Diaz. We'll find out if that happens. Meanwhile, we got UFC Fight Night 214, Rodriguez versus Lemos.
Big talk now, guys.
Let's put the silly stuff aside and get to what it's really about. It's all about UFC Fight Night 214. No, this is one of those ones where it's actually a really key fight in the main event. Obviously, it's a rescheduled main event, so it's kind of a surprise announcement almost that it was the main event. But Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Lemos, it's a big fight to me. To me, this is very much a potential number one contender fight, especially if Marina Rodriguez wins. I don't know how you continue to deny her.
Yeah.
You know, she's been up there. But in terms of marketability, in terms of excitement level, we're hampered by two things. Number one, the fact that neither speaks English, which understandable. As I always say, it's not a bad thing that you speak another language, but in terms of just marketing and getting those little headlines and getting those little, you know, nuggets or whatever, it helps. It helps. And then we're hampered by the fact that Amanda Lemos isn't here yet, so she can't help promote the event. I think maybe as we're sitting down to record this now, after Media Day is done, I think she may be landing sometime very soon. soon. But I'll be honest with you, man. I already kind of favored Marina Rodriguez in this fight anyway. But to know that Amanda Lemos is just now getting here from Brazil, that has to play into it. Like, there's no way. I've made that trip. It's not a short one. It's not a short one. And to be making it on Wednesday? That can't be good.
You've done that trip. What is the jet lag from here to Brazil like?
I mean, it's not as bad as going like to Asia and back, but it's just that 16 hours or whatever on a plane. It's a long time.
And also, actually, I believe that fighters get a bit wary about that because you retain a lot of water after flights. It's harder to cut weight. I remember when Darren fought Kelvin, that was like a big thing that they were worried about.
But. Absolutely.
I mean, supposedly the UFC is going to interview her tomorrow, so I guess we get to see how she looks and see how she's actually playing. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't bode
that,
well.
You're
going to
watch that keenly, are you? That interview, you're going
to. Oh yeah, I'm just chomping at the bit, waiting for that content.
I can tell.
You know, they're.
How many times you've refreshed your email just this?
Just to see if it's already done yet. Yeah. Is it done yet? No, it should be good. But like you said, I mean, it's definitely one of those fights. Maybe it's not one that people are claiming to see, but it is a fight that is worthwhile for the division. You know, you're looking at two competitors that are trying to stay at the top of the game, you know, and trying to keep their names up there. So in terms of it meaning something for the division, it's good. But that's for the diehards. That's for people like us that have to watch the kind of thing. You know, if you're trying to sell it to a casual or somebody that's off to the side, like, oh, why would I tune in this weekend? It's a pretty hard sell, that main event. It's a pretty hard sell.
I think it's going to be exciting. Maybe. Like, I think they both have, like, fan-friendly styles, but you're right. I mean,
helps if they speak English.
I hate falling back on that, but it's just true.
It's true.
It's what gets people to tune in, right?
They either want to hear some cool sound bit, you know, sound bite where they're talking shit, or they're going to be like, are they hot? Do they want to look at them? Or do they have good knockouts? And two of those things.
you're ridiculous, dude. You're absolutely ridiculous. Oh, you're ridiculous. Look, to me, I think this is a number one contender fight. I think for Marina Rodriguez. I don't think that if Amanda Lemos does pull off the upset here, I don't think that she's necessarily clamoring for it. Again, we didn't get to talk to Amanda Lemos, so we don't know exactly where she stands. But I do love the fact that today Marina did say, I'm going to be in New York next week. Because the timing lines up perfect. I mean, sometimes it's just timing helps too, right?
Yeah.
And the timing lines up perfect. For this to be rescheduled, to be moved to a main event, and for it to be moved to a main event 1 week before a title fight, I think that worked out great for her. And I love the fact that she says, I'm going to win this fight, and I'm going to go to New York, and I'll be cage side for that one.
Yeah. And I think also that division sometimes get a bit in similar ways to like the lightweight and the welterweight division, where you've got such big names at the top of them, you can't ever really seem to get past them.
Right.
Joanna and Rose both seem to have sort of taken a step back. Joanna obviously retired, but Rose seems to have sort of taken a bit of a time off as well. So if you're going to pierce through that sort of glass ceiling, yes, we'll
now's
say,
the time.
She's a lady. Yeah, that's the perfect time to do it.
I love it. Co-main event, Neil Magny versus Daniel Rodriguez. Neil Magny, man, very open, I thought, today, man, about kind of the struggles of balancing life as a fighter. As Oscar well knows, it's difficult to
so
to back.
Tricky, dude.
But no, I thought Neil was, you know, talking about his last fight, you know, realizing – you know, I'm like, hey, at this point in your career, 10 years in the UFC, are there still lessons to be had? And he's like, yeah, you know, the lesson is, you know, the last fight. And he was incredibly honest. You know, he was talking about childbirth, about businesses that were being run. And he's like, man, you realize you can't, you know, you can't allow all that stuff to distract you or whatever, to keep you from being incredibly present, you know, in the fight week, in the training sessions and all those things. So I thought it was pretty cool that he kind of peeled back the curtain a little bit on you know, what a struggle that can be. And then meanwhile, you got D-Rod, who this dude just wants to fight every week, man. This dude wants to fight every week. I mean, we're barely removed from UFC 279. He was actually supposed to already fight a month ago, and now he's fighting here. And I mean, basically already like pre-calling out Kevin Holland in the meantime. Intriguing fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that he's pre-calling out Kevin Holland, because I think Magny's, you know, a rough fight for anyone. And I think I like Daniel Rodriguez, but I'd say stylistically, Magny's style is pretty shit for him to deal with. So I also enjoy the tenacity. And look, there's no guarantee Kevin beats Wonderboy. So they both come up short. You could put that fight together. But I just enjoy someone who – I enjoy seeing a scrapper, you know. There was a moment today where he was sort of laughing and joking, and then clearly suddenly got irritated just thinking about Kevin that I kind of found it funny. Yeah, I think of the fights on this card, that one would probably be the one that stands out to me the most.
I agree.
It should be a fun one.
I agree. Heavyweights in the future there, Chase Sherman and Josh Parisian. And Chase Sherman, obviously, in a lot of different spirits, man.
Coming in with swagger today.
Right? Yeah,
fuck, what a win does for you, huh?
Yeah. He normally comes in looking like he just came straight from the gym and, like, his gym clothes. But, like, today, his outfit was on point. He was all dressed black, nice boots, had the nice glasses on. You could see as he was walking the building, I don't know if you saw it, the to walk into the Apex, the mirrors are kind of the windows are kind of mirrored on right. the outside for a good 30 yards walking in. He's just checking his outfit out. He was like, he was feeling himself. He was looking good, bro. He came in looking sharp, man. That's a big difference, you know. I mean, especially in this game, we always say fighters need to come in believing in themselves, and they need to have that kind of swagger to go out there and do what they need to do. They have to fully believe in themselves, and they have to be at ease. And Chase looked probably at most at ease that we've seen him in, felt like years.
Yep. And it was interesting, and I've heard a lot of fighters say this, and it is still true about, you know, listen, you can't let your whole life get caught up in the results of these fights, man. Some of it's out of your control. Yeah. But for him, he had been on that slide, you know, he'd been battling, and to finally get that win, even though he said, look, I can't let it affect everything, you can tell that really changed.
He was like, he felt like he was on borrowed time.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, with that many losses, anybody else, most people had already been gone.
Yep.
You know, so there was something about
him. He's been gone and been back, right?
Yeah.
He's already been gone.
That's true. So, yeah, I mean, I think he probably came in just, you know, never know what to expect. But then to come on the good foot now, and now he seems like he's completely reinvigorated, at least more so than what we've seen him in past.
On the flip side of that, an unexpected highlight of the day today, I thought, was Josh Parisian. He was out there entertaining the heck out of me.
He's funny today.
He was in good spirits. At first, he came in and, like, apologized, I guess, because he was like, I didn't know I was going to be doing interviews, so this is – you know, this is going to be a little rough or whatever, but then he just settled right in. Thought he had, you know, great stuff about the fact that, you know, his last fight was the last fight on his deal, and so he just felt free, and that allowed him to fight free, and then he, you know, got a win, re-upped as well. But then it was just kind of funny where he talked about the fact that, you know, I hate working out.
Yeah.
Like, and so you decide to be a
Now that I can relate to.
I can relate.
That's why you're heavyweight.
Yeah, he's like, these guys are all cheating. They're out there working out all the time, man.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, he was very, very funny. Yeah. I mean, I feel like he's been funny before, but maybe it was just that easy. He was nice. He was extra funny today for some reason. It was fun listening to him.
Flyweights to Geir Ulenbekov versus Nate Maness. Nate moving down to 125, which is he was looking thin. He was looking thin already. He seemed to be in good spirits. I mean, anytime somebody moves down a division, right, I automatically put like a question mark around him because you just don't know how they're going to perform. And, you know, again, I mean, he was 3-1 at the UFC when he decided to change weight classes, but he said he spoke to the PI and, you know, they do all those body scans and they tell like what frame you can be in. It's a tough matchup anyway. Tagir's a tough matchup, but you just, to me, you always got to put a question mark on somebody when they're going down to a new weight class.
I think as well, and I don't have any data to back this up, but it seems to be when you go from bantamweight to flyweight, like guys seem to really, it's like that, you know, they're really stretched out to get down to 125.
It's like a higher percentage of your body at that point, right?
Yeah, so that always seems to be rough for guys.
We'll see how that one plays out.
Yeah. After I had actually picked Nate in my initial staff picks, but today I kind of felt like I was waiting.
Oh, well, he's as good
I think
as
I might switch. Yeah.
You're the pick guy.
I know. I kind of want to switch it.
How commanding is your lead right now?
Seven
picks.
Yeah. I just want to get through the end of the year.
Hey, and look. I mean, the last show that you guys will probably pick is December 17th because you probably won't pick like – Well, maybe
that's
would you
the,
pick,
yeah,
because
that's the last. That's
would
the last.
You pick Bellator Horizon on New Year's Eve? Probably.
Oh, that's a good point.
So maybe about that. But yeah, I think the last UFC is December 17th. So I mean, you're really only like 6 weeks away. And if you're,
let's do this.
If you've got, if you've got a 7-pick lead,
you can mess up every week.
I could, just one. But I it'd be nice to get to the very end and just be like, I'm not even going to pick this one, guys. I'm just going to take the five losses.
that would be cocky.
But I think
turning in a ballot.
I think Abby was one right behind me. He's close, and I think he picked Nate as well. So part of me is like, okay, I could play the game and then try to stick with it. But there, I don't know, there was just something. Like, where are you leaning initially on that fight?
Well, Tagir and Nate?
Yeah.
Tagir.
I know. I don't know. I don't know why I picked him initially. I think it's maybe just because I had more recognition.
Yeah, David Tagir's like, my teammate just beat him. We're just going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Did you not read Tagir's last name before you picked?
Well, no, but I hate it when
it's
I just Ulenbekov. Lean that way.
It has a Russian flag.
It's like the same thing where you sometimes you're like, oh, that's under Magomedov. And you're like, oh, well, that's a distant cousin. You're like, should I still pick him or whatever?
How many times has that not worked? How many times has the
I'm sure there's some where it hasn't. But I think one of the ones when I looked, and I think where I was the question, because I looked in Tier's last record, he lost to Tim Elliott. And I was like.
Highly contested decision.
Yeah. All right.
You're a man.
Isn't it Aaron Bronstetter that always puts out like the stat of like Magoffs are like 18-1 in the USC or something?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, he's technically a Beckoff, so I guess he wouldn't qualify under that. Yeah. But no.
All right, well, I might have to switch that one.
We'll see. All right, listen.
It was an easier pick on this next one.
A bit of unexpected fireworks to start our day today. Yeah. And I kind of want to share this because, I would say Josh Parisian was maybe one of my favorite scrums today. In fact, Josh Parisian probably was my favorite one. But this one was highly unexpected, and I enjoyed it. Soak in a little bit of Mark O. Madsen.
Marco, I know you had to kind of embrace the grind in that last one, a hard-fought victory for you. I guess what did you take out of that performance?
Last fight, it was a win. I love winning. I love growing, and that was a fight that really pushed me to grow. So, great fight.
Very nice. And I guess in the time since, family getting adjusted to being here now, right? Everybody's here in Arizona. I guess what is that taking up most of your time, getting the family adjusted, or what's life like for you?
Life is good. I mean, we are living the American dream. We're living the ultimate fighting championship dream. I moved over with my family, wife, two kids. We are living down in Scottsdale, Phoenix. I'm surrounded with some of the best coaches in the game at Fight Ready. Have guys like Henry Cejudo to help and guide me in this process. So it's great. It's always a challenge moving from one country to another. The things that you probably take for granted, like credit score, having a bank account, insurance, healthcare insurance. I mean, so many things that I had to dive into, but we're settled, and it's great. I mean, it's cloudy today in Vegas, but it's usually always sunny in Paradise Valley down in in Arizona, which is kind of a shift from the weather I'm used to in Denmark.
A little chilly up there. Well, obviously, you were supposed to fight Jakar Close here. He'd been calling you out pretty steadily. I guess, were you excited for that matchup? Were you excited to maybe, get in there and have that fight before it fell apart?
I'm still excited to fight Jakar Close. I can't wait to get in there and punch my right hand through his face. He called me out early. He's been going at it on social media, even told me to meet him at Mayo Clinic. I actually went there. He was supposed to have a surgery. I asked at the front desk. Nobody heard about Jakar. Nobody seen him. He wasn't on any manifest, on any list. So I don't know what's going on with Jakar. I know he pulled out, but let me send the message out right here. I'm ready to fight Jakar Close anytime. And if it's a case of him not being injured as severely as some people say, I mean, I'm ready to go tomorrow.
You were going to fight this man at a hospital?
I was going to fight Jakar Close anywhere he wanted to, even at a hospital.
All right. Well, instead, you get Grant Dawson instead, I guess, a short, change.
Let me go over the game plan. Kick the crutches, punch him in the face. I mean, I don't know if Mayo Clinic is paying for that, but anywhere you wanted it.
I feel like we should just keep talking about this. But we'll talk about Grant Dawson, I guess. What do you think about him as an opponent? Have you had much of a chance to really break him down? Obviously a short-notice fight here.
Short-notice fight. I mean, so far, great matchup. I mean, undefeated versus undefeated in the UFC. There's always a nice ring to that. Grant is... he's been dominating with his wrestling, with his grappling. You know, he has some amazing skills in the areas where I also have amazing skills. So I'm excited. It's a great matchup, and This is really a fight that will put me towards the top 15, the big fights. And going in there, putting a clinic on Grant Dawson, getting a dominant win and really putting him away is going to put me on the map.
So what if the USC comes to you and they say, look, we can give you a top 10 guy or we can give you Drakkar Close? What do you do?
Listen, I can beat Drakkar Close on a Friday and then fight Saturday. So I'll probably get around that. I don't know how long Drakkar is going to be out, but as I told you guys, I'll fight him anywhere he wants it.
Last thing for me, knowing this should kind of catapult you into the rankings or at least a ranked opponent, is a decision enough here? Is just a win enough here? Do you feel like you got to do something to really make a statement, or is it just get the victory and move forward?
I'm going to go out there and put a clinic on Grant Dawson. I mean, he was very eager getting this fight, as I've heard. So, and I also did my research. I know he was a part of Mateusz Gamrot's fight camp. I know he's been putting in the work. I know he feels ready, but I mean, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to drag him to a place he hasn't been before. And I am going to finish Grant Dawson this Saturday.
Hey, Mark. This is your second fight this year. How does it feel to be active again? This is the first time you fought twice in the UFC in your UFC career. So how does that feel?
Feels amazing having two fights in 1 year. On the one hand, on the other hand, I've been ready since May. Honestly, I've been ready since May. I've been calling guys out. I've been telling my manager I'm ready, and I'm ready to go.
You know, it feels like your name isn't being talked about a bunch, you know, you being an Olympian, undefeated. Is it just because you feel like you haven't been active, so your name's just not out there enough?
Honestly, I don't care if people talk about my name or not. I do think it has something to do with the Danish culture, which is based on being very polite, being very humble, which is not a thing that is gaining attraction in the UFC. So I moved over. I have great guys around me. I actually went up to Portland and visited Chael Sonnen. I sat down with Chael Sonnen and Henry Cejudo, small round table. Had a great talk with two amazing people in this sport and gained some insight. So let's see.
So are we expecting you to be a trash talker from now on, or is the Danish culture just will not let you do that?
If I do too much trash talking, I'll probably be hanged on the square when I get back home to Denmark. So no, I think the lesson I took with me from the visit in Portland was actually turn up your own personality. So I do come from a great nation of Vikings. I don't know if we need to bring that into play, the whole Valhalla and what are they called, Loki and stuff, but the Danes can have fun too.
Thank you.
When you're sitting around a table with Chael Sonnen and Henry Cejudo, just how few words do you get to say throughout that dinner?
Very few.
I thought so.
And I think that's the whole point. Learning, listening, and I have to be honest, sitting there listening to Chael Sonnen with my English, I think it's pretty good, but still the pace and all the things coming out that I was supposed to take notes of, it was just an incredible pace. And I truly believe him when he says, I have a different skill set, because Chael Sonnen is amazing when it comes to explaining himself.
Undefeated and undisputed.
Undefeated, undisputed, and one of the greatest to ever do it.
Just one for me. You gave your opponent credit. You said he was a decent wrestler. You said he had good wrestling. But for somebody on the outside, you know, if they're looking at this fight and they say, okay, these are two guys, both of them are good at wrestling, explain the difference of your level of wrestling and your opponent's level of wrestling.
I'm going to show the difference on Saturday. I'm going to show the difference in wrestling. I'm also going to show the difference in grappling. Keep in mind, I'm a white belt. Grant Dawson is a brown belt. Imagine coming into a gym, you're wearing your gi, your black belt, and then you have an Olympic wrestler opposed to you. He's a white belt. I mean, you're probably not going to feel like a black belt when you go in there. So I'm going to show the difference on Saturday.
Olympian, bringing the Chael Sonnen and Henry Cejudo inspired fire. It's funny, Hot T and I were texting during this. We're like, it has to be like some of that Cejudo influence on Fight Ready. And then, like, literally as we're texting that, that's when he reveals, like, sat down with Cejudo, sat down with Chael.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine leaving that house just afterwards? You'd be like, oh my God. Feel like beaten up with verbal words,
But I like it. You know, I mean, I think Mark is right. You know, he's kind of always been this, you know, polished up, nice guy. You know, and he's struggled to get traction despite being undefeated, despite being an Olympian. And I think, you know, play into this feud a little bit with Jakar Close.
Yeah, and I think, look, Mark Madsen's one of those guys where you look at his skill set, criminally underrated in that division, could be a real issue, you know?
Yeah.
And we've seen these guys before where their skills are so good, but for whatever reason, they haven't sort of lit the crowd's attention. This could be that, you know, just that little thing. And also, you know, something that's really good for, sound like a wank here, but building your brand, building your name, is a rivalry.
It's
a feud. Like, people just love it. Like it. You know, I don't necessarily know if I'd threaten to go beat someone up at a hospital, but you know, it's, I enjoy it. It's that Nick Diaz sort of thing.
Do you think he really did that, or was that, or is that a, see, is that a Chael Sonnen S story?
Is that a bus? Yeah. Dude, honestly, I don't know if he's got that sort of, I don't want to say imagination, but like that ability to make up something quite so crazy. I can imagine. I can imagine being a receptionist and this angry bald man being like, Sergio Carl Close, please. I'm a friend of the family. What are you here for? I'm going to kick him off his crutches and beat him to death. Sir, we don't know where he is.
I was going to say, the way they kept talking about, like, oh, they could find no record, where I was like, that's some shady ass shit if they're actually trying to look into records for you. Like, come on. But whatever.
Too funny. I like to see it.
Chael's like, I didn't appreciate that at all.
No, that's not nice of them to do.
They have HIPAA laws.
But I'm a Dane. I'm a Dane. They allow this back home.
All right, so before we play, you said this was an easy pick for you?
I went Madsen pretty easily on this
one. Did you?
One.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, I think Dawson, in terms of like being maybe a better, well-rounded striker and things like that, but I just think Madsen, I think his wrestling, I think it's just going to – just overpower him.
He's an absolute grinder
as
well.
It's just I mean.
Well, look at that. Now, see? That's what Dawson's actually a -215 favorite.
Is he? Well.
Get you some of that sweet,
get
sweet
you
Mark Madsen underdog.
Get you some of that underdog.
For real?
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
That surprises me as well. I mean, Dawson does have an impressive record as well, but.
I feel like Mark Madsen. Okay.
I know. I'm a little surprised. I had not seen the odds at all. I just pulled them up as you were talking because I was like, I figured this was maybe around a pick'em. I'm surprised to see it like that.
I mean, I think it's probably a difference if somebody's maybe looking to see how they're finishing fights. Maybe they see one guy as the striking. But for them to just say that somebody that's an Olympic-level wrestler, just to just say, oh, he's just a wrestler and doesn't have other stuff, I mean, that's crazy. It's a big switch.
By the way, scrolling the rest of the lines, the biggest favorite on the card, Miranda Maverick, -610. Jelton Almeida was also around a -700 before his fight with Maxim Grishin was scrapped, and he was moved, of course, to Brazil. So, all right, listen. There should be some fun fights. You got some names on the prelims. Jake Hadley's in there. Ludwig Shalinian's back against Johnny Munoz. Paulina Viana's on there against Jin Yufrey. Benito Lopez is back. So, you know, there'll be some fights. There'll be some entertainment.
That's it. That's
you
what
you
need to, like, there'll be some fights.
It's a Saturday. It's our favorite sport. It's what we like to do. But, of course, we're all looking to next week, right? UFC 281. Now, I've got a pretty crazy week next week, if we're being honest. I'm incredibly looking forward to it, but also a little bit nervous about it as well because I'm going to I'm not actually going to be in New York until fight day. So I'm going to fly to Tampa, Florida on Wednesday We've got a CFFC event on Thursday night there at the Hard Rock. And then on Friday morning, we're going to fly to North Carolina, Fort Bragg, because we've got Battle at Bragg, the first collegiate wrestling event ever to be on UFC Fight Pass. I'm excited to do that, a little bit of history, and maybe the start of something new. I mean, obviously, we know how much the influence of wrestling has in mixed martial arts. And I think the folks at Fight Pass are starting to take a look at that and saying, you know, we could, you know, we could kind of help maybe bring some athletes over. And so I'm excited to see that. And then on Saturday morning, I'm going to fly to New York and go straight to the arena. I don't know if I've made a huge, horrible mistake here. I'm
and then you're just staying up and then just going straight to the airport afterwards, right?
Yeah, I think so. So my flight out is at 5:35 a.m. So I think basically, yeah, just go straight to the airport, no sleep, and it's going to be weird. But anyway, that's just me. It's going to be
wrecked by the end of that event.
It's funny. I started thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, you know, like – 28-year-old me would have no problem with this. You know, I used to do stuff like that.
What's funny, because I've seen you on the road like this. That just means you're going to go extremely hard after the event to stay up to go to the airport, which means by the time you get
to
the airport.
The airport, my flight leaves at 5:30. Like, by the time, we don't even usually leave Madison Square. Yeah.
You go straight there.
I'll just go straight there. Like, Madison Square Garden.
Double fisted in the car the whole
way. It's usually out by 3.
We leave around 3, right? So I'll just go straight. I'll be straight to LaGuardia.
That, I'm sleeping. My flight's not till 3.
I don't know, dude. Like, you might have a few like this. It could be a late night.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about the card, like,
yeah,
there's a world where both Poirier and Michael come back. Like, I can see a world where that happens. If maybe not, they probably don't do that anymore. Actually, we tell them not to. But
well, because I'm not going to be there on fight week, I want to get your guys' take, because I know that you'll have plenty of time. But I'm sure you're already thinking about UFC 281. It's wild because is. You know, highly excited as everybody was for UFC 280, it seemed like the question mark always was, like, which fight are you more excited for? Is it, you know, is it Islam Charles or is it Adesanya versus Pejeda? And to be honest with you, when people would ask that question and talk about it, I had to give pause, because as excited as I was for Islam and Charles Oliveira, I think I've got to be equally as excited for Israel Adesanya, Alex Pejeda. I'm so glad this fight is happening. I you know, you could make an argument that, oh, Alex Pejeda doesn't deserve to be in a title fight yet. He hasn't done enough in the division. And if you make that argument, I say, to hell with you. What are you doing? This is the history, the story, the everything. So where do you guys stand? Are you guys this whole card is good, right? I mean, this is loaded. Card. We got Frankie Edgar's retirement fight. As you said, Poirier Chandler's going to be phenomenal. I mean, there's great fights up and down it. But in terms of a main event, stoked.
So the Madison Square Garden thing for me is an interesting one, right? Because they have fights there all the time. Sometimes there are fights that they do at Madison Square Garden that I feel capture the Madison Square Garden magic. You know, respect to both men, but Derek Lewis versus Daniel Cormier, I don't think like, wow, that was at MSG. This fight, I do think like, damn, this is like Israel Adesanya, like, wants to be the new Muhammad Ali against his, you know, potential long-term rivalry. This is an MSG sort of fight, and I think they're going to lean into that in the promotion. This is a great, like, you mentioned, oh, it's awesome, this fight's happening. If this was boxing, we'd have to wait 6-8 years for this fight. You know, this is the sort of fight that the UFC and MMA can put together real quick. I don't think there's anyone more deserving than them right now. Maybe Whittaker, but hey, Whittaker came up short twice, you know? I actually think after, should Adesanya beat him, you know, you're really looking at maybe Paulo Costa if he was to beat Rob. But other than that, this division, he's pretty much lapped at that point, like he said he was going to do, inspired by Kamaru. I love this fight, and I think, you know, sometimes their MSG cards, they really try and build up, and sometimes they don't really land for me. This one, it's great.
I completely agree, man. I cannot wait to experience that atmosphere. And Madison Square Garden, I will say, it is a fun atmosphere, man. It's a big building, and it's usually a rowdy crowd, man. It's like, they really do.
Oh, do you remember when we did the presser, and they were like all in front of you, and you started cracking up, dude, because they're like screaming.
So great. Cole Coffey, do you give Alex Pejeda, you know, a real legitimate shot of winning this, or do you feel like this is, you know –
I do. And the main thing is this, because, I mean, even though it is an MMA fight, between these two, it's going to be a striking fight. It's going to turn into a kickboxing fight. And I think when it comes to power, I think he has a very real chance to catch Adesanya. I think Adesanya needs to make it an MMA fight and use that smartness that he's gained in his experience to stay on top. I don't know where I lean right now.
I know. I don't either.
You know, if you put a gun in my head right now, I'd probably lean towards Alex. If it stays a kickboxing fight, I'm gonna lean towards Alex's power. He just has to catch him. But you know, is he smart enough to keep it an MMA fight? And I think that would get him the win. But I don't know. He might want to make a show of it and knock out Alex. And by doing that, he's going to try to keep it in, make it a kickboxing fight. And I think that's the wrong thing to do.
That's
with
the thing with Izzy, though. You could, for Israel Adesanya, because he thinks about optics, right? He thinks about how a fight goes, how it tells his story. You could easily sit there and be like, Israel Adesanya is going to want revenge for that knockout. And he's going to stand there and knock him out. I could easily see Israel Adesanya thinking, welcome to MMA, and take him down and try and submit it and try and prove a point like, okay, look, we came to the sport where you can do everything, and that's where I beat.
I would recommend that.
Yeah, I would completely recommend that.
But then you go even more into Izzy. Everyone says that's what he should do, so that means he won't do that, you know? Like, he's a real guy who thinks about that sort of stuff, you know? So that's curious to me, how he decides to play it. I think I'm one of the people that buy into the idea that Israel's fights, last few fights being a bit lackluster, is not his fault. I believe that opponents get in there and sort of freeze.
I agree.
No one really makes Jared Cannonier do that. Adesanya did because he froze. And I think same for Romero. Okay, admittedly, Romero does fight like that a lot now. But I think Izzy gets a bad rap. I'm curious, because they've been in there two times, that won't happen to Alex because he's already seen it. So he knows what he's to expect. You know, I don't imagine him freezing, but then I also didn't imagine Jared freezing.
I didn't either. But I think I'm in the same camp as you. We've talked about it before. It's like, hey, you notice how something always happens?
Yes.
The opponent always doesn't show up, or that see something, you know, consistency there. I would say, you know, Adesanya, of course, man, he's going to spend all fight week saying that the first fight doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's going to act, you know, make sure that you saw the fight. And,
he
will make sure you saw that. But it does matter, right? You can't say the first fights don't matter.
I don't know, man, because I would usually say, like, that it's so often said that you can't get that image out of your head if you're the guy who lost. But Israel seems to be uniquely one of the fighters who just doesn't hold on to losses. Yeah, like, I feel like he lost to Yan and was over it by the time he got back to the room.
Right.
He just seems to be so content with that, you know?
It's usually when the opponent throws it back in your face, and I just don't see Alex making a big deal to bring it up and say, oh, yeah, well, I owned you before. Well, maybe if he speak better English, maybe we'd hear it.
We sound awful. They're like, if you don't speak English, we don't listen to you.
Yeah. I mean, like, because even if he says it, the translator is going to make it not be as good as he probably says.
We've got
anyways.
Fabiano these days, bro.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I just don't think we're going to get the heat. I mean, because he hasn't. I can't
so
remember him like really saying. What's that?
You're going so excited for these midterms. Nevada turning red. Yeah, you're all about it.
I'm just saying, like, I haven't heard him say to this point. I haven't heard him shit talk about it already up to this point. So why is it going to change?
He only seems to shit talk in Brazilian interviews, and when we have him, he doesn't shit talk.
Right.
But he shit talks a lot. He actually does shit talk a lot, but he seems to, when he speaks to the American media, to actually play the opposite way. It's interesting.
Yep.
He could have given us a lot better headlines if he
would.
I wonder if that's a conscious decision or it's just again a product of the translation and the delay,
or even maybe look, when you're sitting up there in front of us, it's not a particularly comfortable thing. You're just thinking, what's the most blasé way I can get through this, you know, and without giving myself loads of
For such an intense dude, he does seem kind of like just detached in interviews.
Well, because then you see him train and you fight and you're like, this guy's scary.
Yeah,
well, because I just remember when he came in, his first fight was at MSG, right?
Yeah,
so that's interesting. His big breakout moment is he's but I remember excited to listen to him at media day because I'd seen so many times throughout the years where he'd like insulted Izzy, how he's going to come in and take us and all that sort of stuff. And then he didn't. I remember his media day at ahead of that fight being pretty nothing.
Hmm.
That was the same media day that Colby turned on you.
Was it really? Oh, yeah. Jeez. Wonder why I don't remember that part of the media day. Oh, man. Well, I'll be watching everything from afar. I know you two guys will both be in Madison Square Garden. You'll be in New York all week. So let you guys handle the coverage, and I'll join you boys on Saturday, and we'll watch some fights and talk about it afterwards. So, listen, just say if you like what you listen to, especially when Hot T is here, how could you not like what you listen to? It's great to have him back in the building.
Taking time away from his fight camp for
us. Yeah, breaking away from fight camp. I mean, you know, take the time to log in, rate us, review us, leave us some feedback, leave us 5 stars if you can. That'd be great. Any kind of comments that you like. And if you want to take your game to the next level, of course, patreon.com/TheMMARoadshow, where for as little as $3 a month, you can help support the show. help support my man Cold Coffee and me. And, of course, you get the exclusive access to the and a half episode. So, UFC Fight Night 214, you know, enjoy your Saturday afternoon. But we know we're all getting set up for UFC 281 next week. So.
That's funny.
I mean, it's the truth, right? Let's just be honest. But it's a number one contender fight. But, you know, enjoy your Saturday. Get ready for UFC 281. Thanks for listening.